Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. On the program today, the new normal in this economy. Also, and related, who is going to be in charge of all those people working from home? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 26th of October. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a maybe, kinda, sorta, I think so, return to something like normal in a key slice of the American economy. The S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index came out today, and it turns out that in August, the year-over-year increase in home prices was the lowest we've seen since the early days of this pandemic. Prices are still going up, to be clear, just less so. And in some of the hottest housing markets in the country, price growth is cooling just as the seasons change from summer to fall. You know, like it used to be in the before times. But after what the pandemic has brought to this economy, what's normal about home buying might sound kind of different than what you're used to. Marketplace's Matt Levin gets us going today.
Let's start at the beginning of your home search. You know, the fun part when you're favoriting Zillow listings with reckless abandon and not thinking about your down payment. Going forward, those listings will be much more high-tech. Aaron Stumpf is a real estate broker in Sacramento.
Now you pretty much have to have some kind of virtual media.
If you're unfamiliar, virtual tours operate like Google Maps Street View, except inside a living room. A living room that may have virtual furniture.
You can actually pay some photographers to virtually stage the house. So stage a vacant photo with furniture, and it looks pretty real.
Just like in many other industries, the pandemic accelerated technological change in real estate. Appraisals can be done remotely, documents signed electronically, which means
we'll still continue to see short escrows just because we can.
Think 21 days instead of 30, even if the market cools off someday. Daryl Fairweather is an economist at Redfin who swears the market will cool off someday. She doesn't expect concessions buyers are making now to continue forever, waiving home inspections and other contingencies, or the crazier stuff she hears from agents.
In Atlanta, there's even a practice of like giving essentially a cash gift to the sellers.
Kaylee Langston didn't have to give a cash gift to buy her first home in Northern California in June. She just had to pay $30,000 above asking. She says the pandemic housing market will have another legacy. If she ever decides to sell, she'll have high expectations.
When we sell, if we don't have multiple offers, waiving everything and giving us well over the price, I'm going to say, what's going on here?
She's kidding. Kind of. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Isn't a cash gift for the sellers like just what you pay to buy the house? I don't know. Wall Street today, you know what happens when an index goes up after a record high? Yeah. More record highs. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Maybe maybe there's going to be a deal on President Biden's big social spending bill this week. Maybe there's not, because honestly, who can keep track? But all we do know is that it's going to be closer to $2 trillion over 10 years than the $3.5 trillion progressives in the party had originally hoped, which means some of the programs in that package are going to be smaller as well of necessity. We talked about affordable housing yesterday. Today, it's paid family leave. It was 12 weeks in the original plan. It's at 4 weeks now, which is below average, way below average. The United States is just one of a tiny handful of countries on this planet that doesn't guarantee some paid family leave, the others being Suriname and Papua New Guinea. And 4 weeks would still put us obviously well behind most rich economies, but it'd be a pretty big paradigm shift for American workers if our usual reluctance to take time off does not get in the way. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that one.
4 years ago, when Chris Hosselman's daughter was born, the idea of taking an extended leave from his job as a busy trial attorney didn't really occur to him.
I remember my boss being like, hey, Chris, take 2 weeks, you know, try not to check your email too much, you know, you got it, champ. I remember being like, wow, that's awesome.
Of course, he'd have to make up those billable hours. He didn't really stop checking his email. And his newborn was still a newborn when he returned to work 2 weeks later. Hosselman lives in California, where he could have taken 8 weeks of paid family leave.
It wasn't the financial burden so much as, hey, you want to show you're a team player and you want to get back in the game.
Even when paid family leave is available from an employer or one of the 9 state programs, it can still feel hard to use, says Michelle Keefe, founder of staffing firm Mom Up.
You know, what are the other people in the office doing? How are the managers handling it? How are senior leadership viewing it and encouraging people to use it?
And while new moms are sort of expected to take time off, it might be different for dads. An analysis of California's paid family leave program found it led to women taking 5 additional weeks off, but men only a few extra days. But the gap is starting to shrink, says Brad Harrington, the head of the Boston College Center for Work and Family.
I think that idea that, oh, you can offer it to fathers, but they won't take it, is quickly being realized to be a myth and not a reality.
In his surveys, a majority of men take all the time they're offered. But for those who don't, it often comes down to money. Many state programs provide only partial income replacement, which isn't always enough for a family to get by. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
The Chinese property conglomerate few of us had ever heard of till a month or so ago is back in the news in a mostly good way. Some of Evergrande's bondholders did reportedly get overdue interest payments this past weekend. But a couple late payments made does not a thriving company make. Evergrande's carrying more than $300 billion in debt, and until this weekend, hadn't really done much to reach out to its overseas creditors. Domestic investors in China? Yeah, they haven't heard much either. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack has that one from Shanghai.
Retiree Mr. Zhou, he feared giving his first name could lead to government harassment, invests the bulk of his money in real estate. Just how many properties? He says at one point he had more than 10, but less than 20, including 2 condos from the developer Evergrande. And those 2, he says, have already doubled in price. So he was keen when the same Evergrande agent who sold him the properties enticed him with another type of investment.
It was just after July 1st, the Chinese Communist Party's 100th birthday, and the Evergrande agent said the firm released a wealth management product to celebrate this event. It had annual returns of up to 11.8%.
Mr. Zhou and his wife put in more than $260,000. By then, Evergrande was already running out of cash to pay its suppliers and lenders. China's biggest banks have been warning about the risks of Evergrande for years, says Hang Seng Bank's chief economist for China, Wang Dan.
Especially the foreign banks operating in China, they have seen Evergrande as one of those developers that has very opaque balance sheet. And people don't understand how its debt is structured.
Neither do ordinary investors like Mr. Zhou. But like most Chinese citizens, he has trust in Evergrande's main business, property. For two decades, home prices have only gone up. And Evergrande is big, among the top three developers in China.
We invested mainly because I believed in the shiny image of Evergrande's founder.
Because founder Xu Jiaying is a member of the country's top advisory body, the CPPCC. Plus, during the Chinese Communist Party's 100th birthday celebrations, Evergrande's founder was right up at the podium overlooking Tiananmen Square. To investors like Mr. Zhou, this was a sign. Evergrande has the support of China's top leaders. What Mr. Zhou didn't know was officials were worried. Evergrande and other property developers were borrowing a lot, and in some cases, spending recklessly. Earlier this year, China's regulators made it much harder for real estate firms to borrow. Evergrande's employees say the company then pressured them to keep the firm afloat and invest in wealth management products and force them to sell to outsiders like Mr. Zhou. Last month, small anti-Evergrande protests broke out across China, which included home buyers who have unfinished condos. Mr. Zhou says the firm has offered domestic investors like him three solutions. The first, a 10% repayment every 3 months.
In my case, it will take 30 months from next September. That will be 2025 before I can recover my principal and interest. What will Evergrande be like in 2025? We don't know.
The other two solutions involve repaying investors in apartments and parking spots, or if they're still paying off an Evergrande condo, they could have what they're owed deducted from those payments. So far, the central government has shown no signs of offering a bailout to Evergrande. But Yan Yuejing with the research firm eHouse in Shanghai says in areas where Evergrande is a big taxpayer and employer, local governments might step in.
They might not rescue Evergrande with cash. Instead, they will find some government firm or city construct investment companies to cooperate with Evergrande, purchase some of their projects, or give support.
Having things handled on a local level has been confusing and frustrating for investors like Mr. Zhou.
There is nobody in charge of this. When you go to an Evergrande office, they will call the police and 30 to 40 fully armed officers show up.
Mr. Zhou says he will not stop trying to recover his money. And if he can't, he has faith China's central government will step in to help. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up,
it was immaculate. You could have eaten off the floors.
I'm just going to say don't. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 15 points today. That's basically flat when the Dow is at 35,756 as it was today. The NASDAQ up 9 points, also flat with that index at 15,235. S&P 500 added 8 points, a tenth of 1%, 45.74 there. As Matt Levin was telling us, the routines and standard practices around buying a house are changing. So, in-home lending today, Bank of America up 0.9%. JPMorgan Chase deposited 0.2%. Loan Depot gained 0.9%. More evidence we are increasingly reliant on delivery services to bring us everything. UPS reported better than expected quarterly earnings and revenue thanks to e-commerce demand. UPS delivered 6.9% to investors today. FedEx found 1%. Amazon packaged up 1.6%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Green is the currency in global business these days. Green initiatives, green pledges, green promises, they are everywhere. PepsiCo is going to cut its plastics use. Amazon and Patagonia are promising net carbon zero shipping. Hertz, fresh out of bankruptcy, is going to spend more than $4 billion to buy 100,000 Teslas for its rental fleet. Even Saudi Arabia, whence comes so much of our oil, said this week it's going to be carbon neutral by 2060, all of which is great, right? Because humanity at risk from a warming planet. But all of those promises, how are you supposed to know whether they're good for it? Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has that one.
When a company pledges to do X, Y, or Z for the environment, it's not like there's a rule book to follow.
To some extent, these commitments are the Wild West.
Roz Godelnik is a professor at the Parsons School of Design at the New School. The problem, Godelnik says, is who knows if a corporation will make good on a goal that's 20 or 30 years out.
I would look for actions rather than just commitments.
Actions that show what a company is doing right now to fight climate change. In that sense, Hertz buying all these electric cars is meaningful, says Carol Lee Ron with the nonprofit Ceres.
When consumers have the opportunity to drive these vehicles, they invariably enjoy them and see them as positive.
And the deal represents a big investment for Hertz, and not just in cars, says Deepak Rajagopal at UCLA's Institute of the Environment and Sustainability.
They need to have charging stations. They need to have maintenance. They need to have support hotlines.
That kind of tangible investment can help move the needle on big climate goals, like more electric vehicles. Tom Lyon is a professor at the Erb Institute at University of Michigan.
The transition to electrification plus electric vehicles offers the potential for a huge reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in the vehicle sector.
Lyon would like to see more corporations actually changing how they do business instead of making pledges or reducing waste at the margins.
A modest reduction in packaging waste is great, but it doesn't really stand to transform the system.
And transforming the system is what it's going to take to deal with climate change. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Where you've been working the past 19 months, literally the physical place you have been working, depends a lot on what job you do. Healthcare, or retail, food, you're going someplace that's not your house, right? But for the overwhelming majority of white-collar workers, upwards of 70%, the pandemic has changed and is still changing how and where work gets done. Remote and hybrid schedules, most notably. And as more companies move into the brave new world of working not from the office, those companies are coming to understand that somebody's got to be in charge of all that. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that one.
Ashley Rader wears a lot of hats at work. Her favorite? Figuring out how remote work can redefine the 9-to-5 and how that flexibility can give some people more equity in the workplace.
There's a part that's so exciting and you're thinking of completely new ways of working and these big dreams.
But it's not all fun.
Then there's like just the practical piece of like, okay, well, now we have to update everybody's tax records.
Yep, there's a lot of paperwork. There are also a lot of basic questions. Do employees have a good internet connection? Do they need new equipment? Where are they even living these days? Rader became Cleveland Clinic's first director of remote workforce solutions in February, a year into the pandemic. Now, more than 10% of the medical center's employees are working hybrid or remote. That's 8,000 people. Most of them are on the administrative side of healthcare. And for Rater, this isn't just a temporary solution. It's the future.
One day we won't call remote work. It'll just be work.
Cleveland Clinic isn't the only company creating upper-level management positions to oversee remote and hybrid work. Facebook has a director of remote work, LinkedIn has a VP of flex work, and Dropbox has a head of virtual first.
I don't think I've ever really heard of one, to be honest.
Peter Capelli, a professor of management at Wharton, has been studying remote work since it had a different name, telecommuting. He's seen interest in it rise and fall, but this is the first time he's noticed companies creating senior positions to manage it.
Generally, I think these, you know, special purpose job titles at the executive suite are kind of silly, and it's kind of a marker that nothing's going to happen there, right? But I think in this case, it probably is sensible.
He says companies with a large remote workforce need someone with a deep communications and HR background to overhaul logistics, company culture, and performance management, because the trickiest piece is making sure employees stay engaged and keep growing. But he's skeptical that remote work will fully catch on.
I think at the moment we have lots of employers who are talking about doing something hybrid. The smart ones maybe are saying we're going to experiment. But I think, frankly, most of them are watching to see what everybody else does.
There are companies that were fully remote before the pandemic. Darren Murph has been head of remote at the software company GitLab since 2019.
I've spent my fair amount of time in a Zoom box or on a microphone.
He says he truly understood the power of remote work a few years ago when he and his wife adopted a newborn.
Definitely working at night a lot, definitely taking more midday naps. But the ability to work around the clock is super useful when you're a new parent.
And he says the benefits aren't just for employees. He sees remote work as a tool to recruit talent.
The ability to hire the best person for the role, no matter where they were in the world, was very powerful.
GitLab has taken advantage of this. It has more than 1,300 workers in 65 different countries, and it doesn't have any offices. That's one of Murph's big opinions about this, that it's remote or nothing.
Hybrid seems like the best of both worlds on paper, but without extreme intentionality, it quickly devolves into the worst of both worlds.
He says if a company is going the hybrid route, it's all the more reason to hire someone like him to manage it. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Should you, for whatever reason, be in the market for a haunted house, the property in Rhode Island that inspired The Conjuring listed not too long ago for $1.2 million. I, personally, will pass. But I saw a Twitter thread the other day about a real-life real estate horror story. Ursula Vernon is a children's book illustrator and horror author who writes under the pen name T. Kingfisher. And her story begins in December 2019 on a dark and stormy night, perhaps?
My mother has been getting up there in years and decided that it was time she moved down to North Carolina to be closer to me. So I started looking around for a house and I thought, how hard can it be? I'll contact a realtor. We'll see what turns up. You'd think being a horror author, I would have known better than to ask that question, but here we are. Chapter 1. A very nice realtor started looking for houses for me, and a couple I think were a little more than she bargained for, but then she located this amazing house, and it was perfect. It had everything. It was immaculate. You could have eaten off the floors. And I looked at it, and immediately I fell in love. This was about March of 2020. And everything went along fine. We scheduled home inspections, we put in an offer, and then the pandemic really ramped up. And the homeowner decided she was not willing to move in the middle of a pandemic. And you know, I don't blame her. So I said, all right, get a hold of me when you're willing to sell. Chapter 2. 16 months later, the house finally went back on the market. The price had gone up $20,000. One of the things you never want to hear a home inspector say is,
interesting. The house was interesting in that none of the bedrooms had closets except for one of them, which had three closets. And one of those closets did not have a doorknob or a handle of any sort, but it did have a deadbolt locking away whatever was on the other side. Now, I'm a horror author, as I've said, so I knew right away, obviously, this is the murder closet. We managed to pry it open and discovered a little tiny crawl space. And we looked at our home inspector, and we looked at the space, and we said, we don't expect you to go up there. But with the grace of a Cirque du Soleil acrobat, he climbed into the attic and came down a few minutes later and said the next thing you never want to hear a home inspector say, which is, well, I've never seen that before. Chapter 3. It turned out when they had put the addition onto the house, they had built a new sort of roof line, but they hadn't bothered to take the old roof out. So there was now a perfectly intact shingled roof extending halfway into the attic, which was peculiar. But if you think I was passing up a house like this for $75,000 just because it had a murder closet, you have another thing coming. Epilogue. Just as I was starting to relax a little bit, my mom called me up to inform me that she had fallen madly in love and would be staying in Oregon with a gentleman named Oscar for a while longer. So I sat on the front steps and thought about going into the murder closet myself for a while, but eventually decided that, you know, property is the one thing they're not making more of, so it would probably all work out for the best.
Ursula Vernon in Pittsburgh, North Carolina. That story, by the way, had way more plot twist than we had time for here. You can read her whole terrifying Twitter thread and tell us about your own adventure in housing, terrifying or not, at marketplace.org. Final note on the way out today, an item from the Federal Trade Commission. The FTC says that last year, for the first time in 20 years, the number of cigarettes sold in this economy went up. You gotta figure pandemic stress played into that, right? All right, we're out of here, but here is your moment of economic context, a personnel move from the Biden administration. The White House has nominated Jessica Rosenworcel to be the new chair of the Federal Communications Commission. Think broadband access, net neutrality, those kinds of things. Assuming she is confirmed, Rosenworcel will be the first woman to run the FCC. Our digital and on-demand team includes Kerry Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.